What you're about to hear is unsupervised.
Welcome back, listeners, to our fourth episode of Stanley Cup of Chowder's Unsupervised. We're joined by our usual crew here. You have me, Colin Beswick, hosting this week, along with editor Jake Reiser. Jake, how you doing?
I'm feeling a lot more relieved now that the first round is over. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. The heart rate is back to pretty normal. Hell of a game seven. We're also joined by Adam as well. Adam, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Recording this on Thursday night at 10 o'clock. I'm feeling pretty wiped, having been up late thinking about and recovering from the adrenaline rush that was game seven last night. So I'm feeling wired, if nothing else.
Yeah, hell of a game to cover from the press box, for sure, I imagine.
Yeah, I couldn't have asked for a better experience, and I say that coming from the angle of a fan, and being able to be around the attitude upstairs and chatting with, I didn't chat directly with any of the players, but being present in the locker room, you know, it was a far different experience than the elimination game last year, which I was also at. So I'm glad I brought the luck this time, and we're looking forward to this next round, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a roller coaster of a game, just up and down, lead changes. Definitely lots to talk about there. You know, anything that really that stuck out to either of you about that game? Did you take away from it?
I think the lack of finish from Toronto in Game 7 was absolutely astounding. And the way that the Bruins pounced on that, just, I don't know what happened. They played an incredible first 40 minutes, the Maple Leafs, but all of a sudden they just vanished. I don't know whether they went into like a checking mode, like, all right, we're going to play not to lose. We're going to just check for the last 20 minutes, hope that they don't score and go from there. But man, did the Bruins really capitalize on that.
Yeah, and I, from looking at it from the ninth floor, I saw the opposite initial impression of the Bruins, where they came out too strong in some instances, and were, you know, it looked like every shift they were trying to win 10-0 on that shift.
So, you know, if you had to take sort of a synopsis or takeaway of the first round matchup, what would you describe it as, Jake?
A lack of defense, to be perfectly honest. I think that both teams, for as stout and young and talented as their defensive cores are, the offense has really shown, whether it be the top line in the first two games for the Boston Bruins, Mitch Marner for the Leafs, Jake DeBrusk coming onto the scene. I think the offense was clearly the theme for this series.
Yeah, I definitely saw a big picture offensive series. I mean, clearly game seven's score result was a result of that, and or it was an image of that, and games one and two for Boston, where they racked up just so many interesting goals to watch. But I thought that Boston did a weird job of capitalizing on Toronto's defensive deficiencies in short bursts. Like, you know, games one and two were their own section of a series, so to speak, where three and four, you know, Toronto got their teeth back in the series and were able to do it, but they did it in much more metered doses. And I think that just tells a little bit more about the defensive differences between the two teams, where Boston is a little bit stronger. And so it was a little harder for Toronto to break through. But I thought those bursts, again, we saw it right at the end of game seven, you know, not a moment too soon, when Boston was able to take that third period by storm and just close things out.
Yeah, I think my just high level synopsis of the series was sort of you know, tale of two first lines, if you will, if you want to get poetic with it. You know, the first couple games, the first line looked like the best line in hockey, like we're all used to, and then the following handful of games, I don't want to say they no-showed, because that's not fair, it's not true, but the offense certainly dried up a little bit. And, you know, when they needed them, they came through in game seven. And on the flip side, a lot of the talk about the series from the Toronto perspective is, you know, whether or not Austin Matthews showed up or did enough. And I think that's sort of a key component of the series, and that the Bruins, especially Zdeno Chara and McAvoy, were able to shut down one of the best young players in the game as well. So definitely a key component in their first round series win. Shifting gears a little bit, we wanted to talk a little bit about who we had as three stars for the Bruins from their first round matchup with the Maple Leafs. Adam, why don't you start us off? Who did you have for your third star?
Well, this might be a little bit of a sideways choice, just because he ended up being a quiet presence, but definitely a substantial one on the back end. And my third star choice is Zdeno Chara for this series. You know, sometimes at, 40, 41, he's looking a little clumsy out there. But what really matters is that those lapses are momentary, and they're over the course of almost, 26 minutes a night. So I thought Chara was key to, like you said, shutting down the offensive top line for Toronto. But, I mean, he probably played against every line for multiple minutes each game over the course of the series. So I think he was a real key to Boston not getting too far behind. And again, towards the end of game seven, just making a huge difference in stopping Toronto from mounting any kind of comeback.
Yeah, he was absolutely a key component. Like I said, not just against Austin Matthews, but as you mentioned, against really all the lines, and sort of the intangibles too. I mean, certainly leadership there. A guy who's been through plenty of playoff matchups and game sevens, he was definitely a key component. What about you, Jake? Who'd you have for your third star?
I think Char is a smart choice for a third star, as the defense wasn't amazing, I would say, during the first round, and he seemed to be pretty stalwart throughout the whole thing, albeit with a hiccup here and there. But I'm kind of going with a collective third star, and it's a little unorthodox, but hear me out. When the Bruins felt like they were down and out, when they needed a shift to give them a burst of energy, when they needed something to spark them when they weren't feeling it, the fourth line really seemed to do the job, whether it be Sean Corrali or Noah Chari getting goals, the hits, the chances, dominating offensive possession. I think that the matchups that they created and the havoc that they created for Toronto really stood out, in my opinion. If you go back to 2013, the Merlot line that the Bruins had with Sean Thornton, Gregory Campbell, and Dan Paille, this is an upgraded version of that, and it's something that fits into the model of today's National Hockey League, where you've got a little bit of bruising from Noah Chari, you've got skill and high hockey IQ from Tim Schaller and Sean Corrali. I really, really liked what this fourth line did, and it shows just how deep this Bruins forward core is.
Yeah, Corrali, this is just an addition on that too, Jake. I thought Corrali played an awesome third period in Game 7, and not that he was invisible, but the fact that Toronto wasn't visible when the fourth line was on the ice was a huge positive.
Yeah, the fourth line had a shift near the end of Game 7 where it seemed like they were on the ice for, a minute and a half, keeping possession in the offensive zone, just a really key time in the game, keeping the puck away from Toronto's offensive players. And like you said, not that, the Bruins looked great throughout the whole series, but if there was one consistent, I would say the fourth line was definitely the most consistent aspect of the Bruins team. It's a great choice. What about second star? Who do you have, Adam?
I got to go with Pasta here, and the only reason why he wasn't further up the list in the number one seat was, I wouldn't say invisibility. Obviously, he had a big goal to pad the lead in Game 7, but his performance in Game 2 was just out of this world. I mean, he put himself on several record lists, being a top scorer in over all time in the first couple of games of a playoff series and a single playoff game. You could see his effort level not waning over the course of the series. And at times his grip on his stick got a little too tight, but you could tell that he still wanted to be a big part of the Boston atmosphere on the ice. And so, when you saw him lull a little bit during the regular season, it was the same thing. He disappeared on the score sheet, but he was still an effective forechecker, or he was still an effective passer. So I think he performed maybe not up to the score sheet expectations through the middle part of the series, but still managed to stay involved and stay focused on being an effective player.
Yeah, it's a great choice. And I think we've seen it all year, but certainly in the playoffs too, where his game is certainly more well-rounded. You know, he's hitting, he's making defensive plays. It's crazy, 13 points in a first-round matchup. And that, to your point, is with a few games where he wasn't necessarily, you know, a huge factor on the score sheet. You know, being able to cover his game with the hat trick, it's definitely a cool experience for me. I was actually packing up ready to run down to the locker room when he scored the third goal and the Garden went nuts. And so, you know, what an exciting player. Definitely a worthy choice. What about your second star, Jake?
I agree with you, David Pastrnak. I think his suit and hat game alone elevates him into the three-star conversation. Man, oh, does that guy have some style.
I will say that maybe Game 7 could have mastered a little bit better, but the confidence level is exactly where it needs to be. So he could wear whatever the hell he wants.
He's right. Like a week younger than me, but I got to take a page out of his book on how to style, because, man, did he look fly this entire series. But I think just as far as his maturity level goes, one of his biggest criticisms coming off of last season was the fact that he just completely vanished in the playoffs. Did he have a big goal in, I believe, Game 6 against Ottawa? Yeah, he did. And he gave his celebration of, listen, can you hear me now, crowd? Can you hear me now, going to the boards? But I think the fact that he showed up nonstop in this series, were there lulls? Yeah, but that's because a hat trick every game is completely unsustainable in today's NHL. But the fact that he was effective in all 7 games of this series, providing a padding goal in Game 7, that hat trick, man, did that really cement that David Pastrnak is here to stay? I'm really impressed with what he did. I hope that the second round doesn't phase him too much and that he just keeps rolling on that top line with Bergie and Marshy.
Yeah, I think he's got to wear a hat going forward. I think the hat's bringing him good luck along with those 6 suits he's got going there. Definitely a great choice.
I think the Boston faithful is going to have to start throwing some more fedoras on the ice so he has a bigger selection.
All right, and for our first star, probably won't come as a huge surprise. Who do you guys have as your first star?
Well, this was unanimous. Jake DeBrusque, absolutely. This was his coming out party, if anything else. Just his forechecking, how hard he plays. He's literally on the puck every time he's on the ice, whether it's going into the corner to try and steal the puck off of someone's stick, on the boards in a big battle with his body, making plays with the puck on his stick. He drives so fast, and when he gets his legs churning, he just moves. I am wholeheartedly impressed with Jake DeBrusque. If you can't question his maturity level now, that was one of his biggest concerns as a prospect and the reason he was sent back to Swift Current 2 seasons ago. He has matured. He's found his legs. He's been able to sustain it over the course of the entire season. Jake DeBrusque is here. I'm sorry, Matt Barzal. He's got more playoff goals than you right now. And that's not to say that you're not a great player, Matt Barzal, but Jake DeBrusque is really showing off what he's made of.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add to that other than he was most certainly a catalyst. If not in other stretches of the series, the entirety of Game 7 when it really mattered. And that's why I had him at the top of the list. For me, it was a toss-up between who was more productive versus who was more valuable. And I want to say, you know, there are no MVP awards for a round of a playoff series, but I think Jake DeBrusque's performance in Game 7 was the most important individual performance of anyone else on the roster. And so that's why he's at the top of my list for sure.
Yeah, I can't argue that at all. I was joking around on Twitter that I hope he did his stretches for that back exercise he had last night, because he certainly carried the team on a few of those games there. And I just, my Lord, you talk about a guy who has a compete level. I mean, talk about a high engine with him. Like you said, he was making plays where, you know, just making star players look silly, blowing by them. He was all over the ice. We all knew he was good. He had a great year here in the regular season. But I think he really put his name on the map in a national level with this first round series. And it's really exciting to see, you know, what he's brought to the table. So that wraps up our three stars. You know, talking about Jake DeBrusque and some of the highlights that he had, there's certainly a lot of big moments that stood out in this first round series. It wasn't without a lot of highlight reel type things. Anything stick out in particular to you guys?
I think that Tuukka Rask stands out for me as someone that needs to be talked about, and not necessarily in a great way. He seemed like he was fighting the puck from game three on. I had the fortunate experience to cover game five, albeit a loss. And afterwards he said, I probably could have stopped more pucks with my eyes closed. When you're fighting it, you're fighting it. As much as it's a small sample size for Rask to have bounced back well after games like that in the regular season, every game counts that much more in the postseason. It brings you one game closer to elimination every loss. So as much as you want to see him perform as well as he can, he seemed to be really fighting it for most of the series.
Yeah, and, you know, Tuukka's going to face some rubber against an offensive team like Toronto, especially since they're trying to make up for other deficiencies on their roster. So I'm not all that surprised that Toronto was able to put a lot of pucks on net, and that many, I would say many of them, but that more than we might have expected went into the net. So I don't feel as pessimistic about Rask's future in these 2018 Stanley Cup playoffs, but it was a little bit concerning to see, you know, especially, you know, mid-second period of game seven, where you could see him making a few extra skates out to get to the puck, you know, behind the net, or skating out to the middle of the circle to play a puck when Toronto's rushing hard, like wasn't in the middle of a line change. That started to stress me out a little bit, and I was worried that Tuukka was just trying to get too involved in the course of the game. And I'm glad it, you know, he kind of leveled out a little bit. Maybe it was, I don't think it was anything that anybody said to him, because, you know, patented hockey terminology, don't say anything to the goalie going into the third period of the game seven. But I was less worried once the third period started, when he had settled down a little bit, moving around in the crease.
Yeah, Russ is one of those players where there's seemingly no middle ground with the fan base. You either love him or you can't stand him or whatever it is. I usually find myself as a moderate when it comes to that stuff. I think he had, you know, some great moments and, you know, he stole a game in there, but he also struggled at times. I think in game seven, it wasn't really one or the other. I think, you know, two of the goals were tipped in shots that really there's nothing he could do. That being said, to Adam, to your point, I think, you know, for long stretches of that game, some of the decision making, especially with the puck, some of the things where I thought he was a little bit shaky, to use your term, but overall he got the job done. They ended up winning the series, but against Tampa Bay Lightning, I think it's fair to say he may have to step up his game a little bit against a team that has, you know, Steven Stamkos and Kucherov and, you know, Point and all these offensive stars and superstars. So he certainly could have played stronger, but at the end of the day, I think a lot of the rhetoric we're hearing when it comes to him is probably a little unfair.
Yeah, I'm glad he didn't take it as far as he did, you know, early in the series when he had to make that diving play just to, you know, push his own chip pass out of his crease or out of the slot. So when that was what I thought was coming next some point in the second, it was just, you know, it evened out. Like I said, I think he did all right. I think he was getting a little excited, but he's got some experience under his belt. So I'm glad he relied on that experience and not his nerves.
I want to pose a hypothetical to Bruins fans who don't like Tuukka Rask and think Tuukka Rask should not be in a Bruins uniform. Look at the Philadelphia Flyers. Great, great offense. Claude Giroux, Jakub Voracek, Sean Couturier, Wayne Simmonds. They've got great firepower. A young defense. Ivan Provorov, Travis Sanheim. They've got great piece moving around. Shane Gostisbehere. I don't know how I could affect Gostisbehere there. Really great mold there. But the lack of goaltending. Brian Elliott can't step up. Michael Neuvirth can't step up. Alex Lyon, Peter Mrazek. They can't find a consistent goaltender. If you lose Tuukka Rask, that is exactly what's going to happen to the Boston Bruins. Tuukka Rask isn't the best goaltender in the NHL. Don't get me wrong. He certainly has his flaws. I think that he's a little streaky at times. And he's not a top five goaltender at the moment. But if you lose Tuukka Rask, you're going to regress and become the Philadelphia Flyers. And do you really want that? Do you really want to be on the edge of your seat every game, not knowing whether your starting goaltender is going to be able to handle it? You can have a lot more comfort in Tuukka Rask than you can with any of those goaltenders I just mentioned for the Philadelphia Flyers. So please, yes, Tuukka Rask certainly isn't a perfect goaltender, No one's a perfect goaltender. You're not going to get a Henrik Lundqvist or a Braden Holtby or a Carey Price right away. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a lot of time, and you're going to be left with a lot of shuffling. It's going to be a revolving door.
Yeah, and there's a lot of chance of getting, you know, getting a goalie to develop to that point in the NHL, just because there's such a focus on having a consistent, structurally sound goalie, which Tuukka is. So, you know, when I said I was starting to get nervous about Tuukka scrambling a little bit, when he settled back in, when he was making his positional plays and just getting back into his rhythm, that's what settles down the team in front of him. And, you know, again, maybe not top five in the league, but top five in my heart for sure. I think he's doing a great job.
Well, I think it sort of gets lost in the shuffle there, but I mean, Toronto is one of the very best offensive teams in the league. And I think that's probably not being talked about enough. They were going to score no matter if it was Rask or anyone else in net. They were going to find ways to put the puck in the net. And I know that doesn't absolve, you know, every single goal that went in, but I think it's important we keep that in perspective when we're talking about his performance. But speaking in terms of performance and perhaps, you know, a few players who we would have liked to have seen more from and who we think we may need to see more from going into this second round matchup, is there anyone that jumps out in your mind, Adam?
I thought that David Backes was under visible. I don't know that he was underperforming because he was, you know, still all over the ice, but since Toronto was so quick, I thought it was hard for him to make the smart hit. It doesn't mean that he didn't have the opportunity to make the big hit, but it probably would have put him out of position more often than not, especially if he missed, because Toronto was so quick up front. So I think the core of the game that he's been playing for Boston so far in his tenure here has been, you know, get deep in on the forecheck, knock somebody over and steal a puck, or at least make their pass uncomfortable or uncomfortably rushed. And I just didn't see that out of him. That's no knock on him as a person or as a player, but I think he just wasn't as effective as he should have been.
Yeah, I think, you know, I noticed him for a few shifts here and there throughout the series where, you know, especially on defense more so than on offense, but I agree with the overall choice there. What about you, Jake? Anyone that really stands out when you think about that?
I think of Rick Nash, and it's really tough for me to say it because the role that the Bruins really got him to perform in was so that he was throwing pucks on net and getting points in the playoffs. It's not to say that he hasn't been making smart plays. He's still drawing penalties and winning puck battles and opening up space. But just the puck luck isn't there. He had a lucky goal in the first two games on the power play, being in front of the net. Yes, he absolutely earned that goal. But otherwise, he seemed pretty invisible on the score sheet. And that's really tough because for the price you gave up for him, Ryan Spooner, Ryan Lindgren, Matt Bolesky. Sure, Matt Bolesky wasn't going to perform like that. But I don't know. I'm not regretting letting go of Ryan Spooner. He didn't have a fit on this team, unfortunately, and good for him in New York. But you just wish that Rick Nash was providing a little bit more on the score sheet and less so just being there for chemistry for David Krejci's sake.
Yeah, Rick Nash was someone that came to mind when I thought about this as well. And it's tough to be too hard on him because, you know, I think he actually led the Bruins in scoring chances in the first round. He was certainly getting, you know, the opportunities to score and just, you know, missing the net or, you know, Frederik Andersen made great saves. So, you know, he certainly had some great plays. He also took, you know, a bad penalty or two in game seven as well. It was a little bit selfish. So there's some criticism to be earned there. I think what it boils down to with me is the same with you, Jake, is that he was brought in to be a difference maker. You paid a pretty hefty sum to bring him in as a rental. And I just don't think that in terms of the scoreboard, he brought enough to justify that yet. But I think Bruins fans are all expecting that he'll break through in the second round here. For me, they're sort of a similar situation, though. The name that also came to mind was David Krejci, which is probably a little bit surprising given that you look at, you know, his overall production in the first round series. He ended up with actually 8 points in the seven games. But again, a lot of the scoreboard gets distorted because of the first two games where the Bruins scored approximately 500,000 goals. I think he was really sort of just absent for long stretches in the middle games. And in a series where the first line was definitely the focus of Mike Babcock's defensive schemes, having David Krejci show up, you know, on offense would have made the series a lot easier. Again, not crushing the guy. He certainly brought value. He did score some points, but I think, you know, he's someone that fans and team alike look to carry a pretty heavy load, and I think there's certainly more room for him to improve in the second round. Moving on to the second round, want to do a quick preview of this. We'll be joined later on by a special guest from our sister site, Raw Charge. But I think I can speak for all of us in saying we're all very excited for what should be a very, very interesting second round matchup with the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, the Bruins did match up well against them in the regular season, but as we all know, the playoffs are a whole different animal. You know, how are you guys both feeling about the series? Any X factors that you think are going to play into this?
I think this is kind of speculation, but I think that the forward depth on Boston might actually outmatch Toronto this time. Or sorry, I might outmatch Tampa Bay this time. And I say that because, like Jake's third star pick, the entire fourth line on Boston has been just, you know, successful in their own way. You know, they don't have to show up on the score sheet because they're a checking line. They're not even an energy line. They're just a, you know, a mitigation line where they're cutting down the zone exits for the other team and really making trouble for – they made big trouble for Toronto in getting some of their backup scoring or their depth scoring going. So I think in a regular season peak of things, yeah, Tampa's been pretty deep, but I think Boston's had the opportunity to fine-tune that over seven games against – a strong offensive opponent, and defensively, you know, it's going to be a much tighter matchup. So I think everybody's ice is going to get a little bit smaller. The time to make a play is going to get a lot smaller. And I think obviously since that's the case, I don't think we're going to see much of those, you know, multi-goal periods that we saw with Boston and Toronto. I think they're going to be a lot closer games on the score sheet. They're going to be tighter checking, and I think they're going to be, I don't know. I want to say there's going to be a couple of games that go to OT because we didn't see that against Toronto. There's going to be some real tough battles.
I think it's going to be the complete opposite of what the Toronto series was, and you're absolutely right in the way that it's going to be tight, low scoring, high hitting, but I think that plays right into the Bruins' advantage. I think that it's going to open up the opportunities for Brad Marchand, who's so crafty of a player. He's going to take advantage of guys trying to hit him or have already committed to a check and just stop up and deke around him. He's a master of the double back where he'll be skating one way and double back the other way and come back up to either the top of the point or to the other side of the ice. I think it works very well in his favor for guys who are going to try and commit and really put the body on him. And that's my X factor in it. The skill guys, the Marchands, the Pasternak, the guys who really like to be creative. It got stymied in the last five games of the Toronto series because Toronto was so fast. You couldn't catch up so fast. You couldn't be methodical. So I think that it's going to work really well in favor of the Bruins, the fact that they're going to be able to kind of take their time a little bit more, evade those checks, open up space like that.
I don't have any sort of brilliant insight as to why I feel this way, but for whatever reason, I feel better about the Bruins going against this Tampa Bay team, who is very good and shouldn't be taken lightly by the Bruins or any other team. But I just, there's something about the matchup between these two teams where I think the Bruins are gonna walk away at the end of the series as winners. I think they're going to be close games. I think it's still going to go. It's probably six games or so. I think it's going to be great hockey. I'm really looking forward to it. Adam, I know you won't be able to join us in our upcoming guest segment. Did you have any thoughts or prediction on how this series is going to go?
See, this is so difficult, especially having been to a Game 7, just because that's the first one I've been in a building for, and I think that's the most exciting hockey that there can possibly be, and I have a hard time seeing that Game 1 through whatever against Tampa Bay isn't going to be exactly like that the entire way through. I mean, Boston's fired up. I can only imagine that Tampa Bay is fired up and they're a little bit more rested. My prediction, I think I mentioned it already, that I think there's going to be some OT games going through this series. I think Game 7's going to overtime. And that's, I'm basing that just because that these teams are pretty evenly matched on the forward depth. Tampa's had some benefit at their trade deadline of picking up some really strong defensive additions to shore themselves up for a long run. And I think the Bruins are going to cut it off, whether it's in Game 7 or whether it's in extra Game 7, if it's in Game 8 of this series. I think Boston's taking it. But it's definitely going the distance. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've given sort of our local perspective on it. Up next, we're going to be joined by Matthew Estevez from Raw Charge, who covers the Tampa Bay Lightning, to get a insider's perspective on the series from him. Stay tuned.
Take care, guys. Thanks again.
All right, welcome back, folks. As mentioned before, we're welcoming in special guests today. We have Matthew Estevez from our sister site at Raw Charge here to talk a little Tampa Bay Lightning versus Boston Bruins in the second round. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good after a big win. Looking forward to seeing another great matchup with Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, that was a phenomenal game.
Yeah, I think most people are probably on the edge of their seat, didn't know how it was going to end, but just fantastic hockey all the way around.
Oh, yeah.
We've got so much to talk about this series, being Atlantic Division foes. Just going into the series, what would you think are the biggest strengths and the biggest weaknesses for Tampa Bay?
Tampa Bay's biggest strength is their offensive firepower. Tampa is one of the deepest teams in the league when it comes to offensive firepower. They were the highest scoring team during the regular season, and they didn't click in the same manner that other teams did in the playoff, like Boston or Winnipeg. But Tampa pretty much clicked how they always have clicked offense in their first round against New Jersey. Weakness? The defense is a slight worry. The top three for Tampa Bay is really, really strong. You've got Victor Hedman, who's a North candidate. You have Ryan McDonough, who could arguably be a number one defenseman on many NHL teams. And you have Anton Strahlman, who's Anton Strahlman. After that, you go to, Dan Girardi, Braden Coburn, and the young Mikhail Sergachev. When you look at their ice time, it's a very, very stark difference. Hedman in almost 27 minutes a game. Strahlman and McDonough are both playing just about 23 minutes, and then it drops the rock to Coburn and Girardi, who are both at 15 minutes, and even farther, Sergachev, who's not even getting 11 minutes, currently sitting at about 10.5 minutes. So the worry with the biggest weakness for the Lightning is, can riding their top three defense get them past a Bruins team that is just as deep offensively as they are?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because I think there's some similarity with what the Bruins are doing with Zdeno Chara and Charlie McAvoy in their first pair. Chara's been playing over 26 minutes a night in the first round here. And, as amazing as he is at 41 years old, you wonder as the second round progresses if that's sustainable. But you mentioned Ryan McDonough, obviously probably the biggest name that moved at the trade deadline. How would you say that he has fit in as he's adjusted to playing with his new team?
Overall, he's been outstanding. To go a tiny bit more in depth, he was a little rusty for his first few games suiting up for us. That's primarily due to he hadn't played in a while due to his injury. He was still getting acclimated to how the Tampa Bay Lightning played defense systematically compared to the Rangers. And the way that John Cooper and his coaching staff addressed that was by giving him a very, very familiar pairing with Dan Girardi. Pretty much his entire time with us during the regular season until the very, very end, last 2-3 games, he played with Girardi almost exclusively just to get himself acclimated and used to how we play and stuff like that. And then near the end, they started putting in with Strawman, which many of us at Raw Truck were really hoping they would do, because the McDonough-Strawman pairing when they were in New York a few years ago was an extremely effective shutdown pairing. And it's been exactly that for us so far. Like I mentioned before about the differentiation minutes, McDonough and Strawman pretty much have almost exclusively played together through the first round of the playoffs, whereas Hedman has had a rotating cast of partners. Sergachev gets the low-end third-pairing minutes to kind of fill all the extra space in. Overall, McDonough has been everything that was advertised.
You know, McDonough wasn't necessarily the only trade deadline acquisition as well, and a guy that I don't think we've talked about a lot, we didn't do it on a Charged Up either, is JT Miller. How has he fit into the lineup for Tampa Bay?
So, Miller was a late addition to the trade. The coaching staff, specifically John Cooper, says he wasn't a throw-in like some people said. They specifically wanted Miller because they thought Miller brought a different of play that Gladyslav Nemestikov didn't, which was a much more physical puck hound than what Nemestikov was. This is not to say Nemestikov wasn't a good puck hound, but Nemestikov didn't really have the size to impose his will on opposing players. JT Miller will just run through somebody if he has to. And putting him with Kucherov and Stamkos has been a revelation. He immediately meshed with them from the first game and has been putting up points ever since. And he has been a huge surprise for the Lightning and their fans, because a lot of the fans were like, JT Miller? Okay, we know of him, but is he good? Because we're giving up like a 50-point guy for this guy, and JT Miller is more demonstrably better than what Vladislav Nemestikov was when he was on this team.
Going back to the defenseman pairing usage, how do you imagine they'll use the pairs in terms of covering the Bruins top line? Do you imagine they'll use the McDonough shutdown pair, or will we be seeing Victor Hedman going against, you know, Patrice Bergeron, Pasternak, Marchand?
Cooper has followed the same type of strategy throughout the entire season and in the first round of the playoffs, where the shutdown pair is McDonough-Strawman and with Hedman thrown in there as well. Hedman gets thrown wherever. If McDonough-Strawman aren't out there, Hedman is out there. That's pretty much the strategy that John Cooper is doing. If that shutdown pairing's not out there, Hedman is out there, because Hedman by himself is just that much of an impact player on defense. It doesn't matter who's on the other side. He's shown now the past three seasons that you can just put anyone with him and he will still be an impactful, positive shot share defenseman. I think at home, you're going to see a lot more McDonough-Strawman against the Bergeron line, because we'll control them away, where Bruce Cassidy can move away from that pairing a lot more easily. You will probably see Hedman get thrown out there much more often. It honestly depends on how the game kind of flows. And if it's a game that's stuck on the penalty kill for the Lightning or the Bruins, it's going to completely change the complexion of it and all that type of stuff. But more than likely, you're going to see an extremely healthy dose of Donna Strawman and Hedman.
Talking about the matchup as a whole, there are so many different pieces that you can point to on each team that make so many contributions for both sides. But who would you say is the X factor for each team, especially for Tampa? Who's going to make the biggest difference in this matchup?
I've been on his horse the entire season. But the player who I think is going to be huge for the Lightning offensively is going to be Braden. Braden Point has been a phenomenal story for the Lightning ever since he made the team last season at the camp. He's our shutdown center. He's a phenomenal player. He scores at a rate that baffles you at times. And he can go with anybody. It doesn't matter who he goes up against. He always plays well. He didn't have the same kind of offensive production that he's used to in the first round compared to the regular season, but this is his first playoffs. He's still learning a little bit. And if there's one player who can definitely step up and be that X factor for the Lightning, it's going to be Braden.
We got a great series coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I think everyone's going to be on the edge of their seat for the whole ride through. What do you think's going to happen in the end?
Well, Jake, like I told you on my podcast, I'm calling Lightning in 7. This series is literally a coin flip. Like, you and I on my podcast charged up. We went down matchups for four defense, goaltenders, and special teams, and it really is a coin flip. It's going to come down to, like, the X Factor question that you came up with. It's going to be Braden Point stepping up for us, or one of your guys, second or third guys, who's going to step up and be that big man, whether it's Backes, DeBrusque, or one of the Nats, or Krejci. It's going to come down to that. I don't think it's going to be our star players who are going to break this series out. It's going to be one of our depth guys who's going to make the biggest difference moving forward.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I think it's going to be just a great matchup. Two really great first round opponents for the Bruins and the Maple Leafs, and now a very, very good Tampa Bay Lightning team. I got to go personally with the Bruins. I actually think it's going to be Bruins in six. Just a gut feeling on that. Bruins matched up well in the regular season, but I do think they are going to be hard fought close games regardless.
You listeners on Unsupervised here can go check out my conversation with Matt on Charged Up on his podcast. But I said Bruins in seven, and I think it's going to be such a tight game, such a tight series, lots of hard checking. It's going to be really smart. I think John Cooper is such a smart coach, and it's going to be played incredibly highly just tense. There's going to be such high energy and such high tension between both teams. It's going to come down to the last few minutes of the last game, but I think that Boston has enough depth, and Bruce Cassidy uses his team so well-rounded overall that I think it's going to just put them over the edge in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're all excited to watch the second round get started. Definitely looking forward to it. I wanted to thank our guest, Matthew Estevez. For our listeners, you can find him on Twitter at Matt Estevez89. As well as can catch his writing at our sister site, Raw Charge, rawcharge.com, and at Raw Charge on Twitter. Again, thanks for your time, Matt, and best of luck to your team.
Game on.
Yeah, it was great to come on here and talk to you guys. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. Take care, Matt.
Yep, you too.
And we're back. Thanks again to our special guest, Matthew Estevez from Raw Charge, for joining us on this episode. Really looking forward to the second round matchup. We appreciate everyone tuning in. And as always, we welcome any and all feedback, whether you leave it on Facebook, on StanleyCupOfChowder.com, on our Twitter page at SB Unsupervised, in the Anchor app, on the iTunes store. As always, we appreciate any feedback and ratings you can leave. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next episode.